Hi, I'm Colleen Phelps, the host of Classically Speaking. This year, while we're looking forward to some new interviews, we wanted to take you back to some of the episodes of Classically Speaking that you might have missed, including this one with Ben Folds. Now, you may be thinking, what's a rock star doing on my favorite classical music podcast? But Folds is no stranger to the classical world. At its heart, all art is about telling stories, and that's exactly what Ben Folds did with us when I asked him about the piano concerto that he wrote for Nashville Ballet. Songwriters often put their life story directly into their work, literally.
I've thrown my phone in a pool in newborn veins.
Take away all the amplifiers and put this particular songwriter with an orchestra, and apparently he'll do the exact same thing. The story of Ben Folds, the rock star who wrote a concerto. I'm Colleen Phelps, and this is Classically Speaking. If there is such a thing as a typical rock star, it's probably not Ben Folds. And he knows it. He describes himself as the rock anti-hero. Now, I may be a classical musician, but even I know that this is kind of an archetypal paradox. Aren't all rock stars supposed to be anti-heroes?
Look up rock musician in the dictionary and you see a guy with long hair and tights and poking out his hairy chest and he knows everything. For the most part, the songwriters and the musicians that came before my era were branding themselves as people who knew and people who you might get to be if you were so lucky. And I think when I came along and I'm looking in the dictionary and I see the picture of that which I just described, and I'm thinking, why couldn't it be just the guy next door?
And that persona carries him into the classical music world as well. The pianist next door, a guy whose rock albums are a popular favorite for college and high school a cappella choral groups to extend, embellish, and modulate like this arrangement.
Said what you wanted to hear.
And what
the guy who collaborated with Y Music, a contemporary classical ensemble. And the guy who got a commission from the Nashville Ballet and the Minnesota Orchestra to write a piano concerto. The project started as a hypothetical from Nashville Ballet's artistic director, Paul Vasterling.
It was an idea he had over dinner, and it wasn't really necessarily something that was premeditated. But yeah, he just said, maybe if you did something like a piano concerto. I think that was supposed to be to get the ball rolling, like a piano concerto. And then I could say, oh, we could do something else. And I was like, okay. How's that?
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to make something long form.
Particularly long form with orchestra?
Yeah. Instrumental and long form is something that I had always thought was in me.
Writing an album and composing a long, substantial piece of orchestral music are two very different processes. So Folds took himself to composition school and to repertoire class, listening to classical concerti and string quartets.
Yeah, I mean, I filed through the ones that I thought I knew. And the more I listened to them, the more I realized that I didn't know them at all, you know. It wasn't so much about going, oh, I'd like to, you know, go back and find some inspiration. It was much more base than that. It was much more like, oh, wow, yeah, there's some basics that I don't know. With a piece like this for a rock musician, you do need to consider form and how it's been done. I have a definite relationship with form when it comes to pop songs. I rage against it. I try to get out of it. I try to make them longer. I try to make them shorter. I try to start with the bridge. I do everything I can to get out of it. And then at the end of the day, I become very, very pedantic about putting it back into its place. It's part of the choreography for me. So a long form struck me as something that was particularly scary because you can't just go back to the first bar and play the whole thing again and see. You know, you've left that realm of being able to just go, okay, look, I'm in the chorus and I don't feel it, so I'm going to go back to the intro and play it again and then go have a beer. And then I tried to quit, but I'd already signed the contract. I wanted to quit. It seemed like it was too much.
As a singer-songwriter, pop musician, when you're composing an album, you can play the songs for people. You can get it out there. When you're writing for yourself, you know it will get performed when it's done. That's not always the case for classical composers, though. Getting past the premiere is a feat. And Foltz was open about the fact that a lot of this was counterintuitive to his rock background.
You have to have a talent for doing something that you will not hear anytime soon, like a draftsman who draws a building that may or may not get built. Classical music, if you can call it that, was always created by people who may hear the piece. If the piece is played once, they may not hear it ever again. And, when it's pop music, you hear it while you're doing it. So it's a very different relationship. There's something very special about what you hold in your mind and how tightly you hold the imagination of where you might go with a piece without hearing it.
How does the preciousness of a performance of this piece feel different from like one of your pop songs where you'll get to play it like a million times mm-hmm. in front of an audience? This, even though you've played it a lot mm-hmm. and you're still getting to play it, it's still not that many.
I aspire to that condition of playing my songs with it where I can throw it around some, be rough and tumble with it, because I think that is, music is supposed to be played that way in a way. So, you know, all the notes that come between, you know, the bottom and the top one of a big run were the biggest thing in the world for you when you were rehearsing and when you were practicing. But at the moment that you play it live, suddenly that whole smear between is not cut up into tiny parts. It's cut up into one big sentence that you're speaking to someone.
Concerto for Piano and Orchestra by Ben Foltz opens with a wall of sound from the strings. Even just listening to the recording, you can see the full bow being used. In the dress rehearsal that I watched with Nashville Ballet, the conductor told the orchestra to go for an old Hollywood sound.
The opening of that, really, is written like a string quartet or a quintet. Thing is, guess what? There's a lot of players and it's huge. And I didn't expect it like that. And the Nashville Symphony Orchestra tends to play things large and American, like it's a big American orchestra, you know? And even with the same number of players sometimes, it wasn't that big of a sound. It was much more separated by a faster vibrato and schmaltzier touch. But here the Superman soundtrack appears. It's kind of cool. I mean, I was surprised. Like you said, the wall of sound, I wasn't expecting it. I was holding the wall of sound for the second time that comes up at the end of that movement, and it's hardly any different. So this is where you learn about orchestration.
I know you said you listened to a lot of classical concertos and you looked at a lot of Beethoven. Did you have like Gershwin and some of the crossover in mind too?
There are similarities simply because he's a Broadway guy. He may as well be a rock guy. I'm a rock guy. I may as well be a Broadway guy. And we're bringing more people to the orchestra. So when people are sitting out in the audience, I feel like nods to Gershwin aren't even discussed in the back of my mind. They're just happening. If you took the words and the singing off of a few of my albums, they sound a little bit like what I'm doing too.
The second movement has some percussion sound combinations that are so beautiful together, especially the bowed vibraphone. Is some of that a callback to your background as a percussionist?
Yeah, because, I did. That wasn't the thing that I wanted to do, that I expected to do with my life when I was a kid through being a teenager, was being an orchestral percussionist. As a result, I probably over-percussioned, if that's a word. And I think that over-percussioning is the sign of an amateur. I do. I think when you really listen to a lot of stuff that I really love, and I think there's a certain amount of percussion in it, there's about a quarter of what I think is in it, you know. And that used to frustrate me as a percussionist, and I guess it might have for you too, is that are you serious? 73 measures before I get to play one triangle? Sometimes you want to play. Yeah, those guys are like, they're having to run back and forth between the mallets and other things. So yeah, that's fun.
You do some stuff in the inside of the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Get your hand in there.
Yep.
Do you do that in any of your other songs?
A lot, yeah.
Oh, you do?
It's all, I don't do it as much live because it just doesn't make sense. And when I'm playing solo, getting there, singing at the same time, you know, you'd have to pass the mic, you couldn't, you know, it doesn't work. But it's on all of my albums, and it's generally read as a guitar part. So yeah, that was something I knew probably as soon as Paul said, do you want to do a piano concerto? I was like, I've always been wanting to do that in an instrumental piece, so.
I think part of why that's surprising to me is that, like, I think back to the Ben Folds Five, and I always picture you on an upright for that, and you can't do that with an upright.
Right. Well, there was song on that first record two songs that were on upright, and it's interesting that those are the biggest sounding ones. The other songs were on my Steinway, and it sounds much smaller.
When you get on an upright, you just feel like you can beat it up. Is that maybe why?
Well, uprights are tough because you actually can't. I mean, they don't really take much of a pounding, you know. It's good. Uprights good for like a ballad usually, or a saloon song.
6 a.m., day after Christmas. I throw some clothes on in the dark. The smell of cold, car seat is freezing. The world is sleeping, I am.
Art in general, just the way I see it, is always about storytelling. And it doesn't have to be a story that I ever tell anybody. I think my story was, in the back of my mind, was the story of a piano player who plays rock and roll music that has been asked to do a concerto. I really think that's what I hear when I play it now. It's like, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like the story of a rock and roll piano player who like went back through some old scrolls and tried to communicate in that way.
After the break, Ben Folds on his love of old things and how the orchestra is a metaphor for civilization. Ben Folds didn't just write the concerto, he had to play it too. And like with the act of composing, there were some mechanical differences after a lifetime of rock playing.
Scale does not work in the favor of the symphony orchestra when it comes to time. If you're a soloist sitting in with an orchestra and there's a person playing a triangle in the back, there's serious latency from the front to the back. That's really all it is. Simply put, one is an oil barge, which is the symphony orchestra, and the other is a sports car or even a tricycle. And when you make something as big as the orchestra, which is the reason why it has to be such a mini civilization, you look at the conductor and you see one thing, listen, and you hear another. And you have to know how to navigate those two things. It's its own art form, so it's difficult. I look up at the conductor and I'm like, you not right. I don't believe you. I got this. Like, and it's really hard not to do. Just in the spur of the moment, I might want to follow the conductor. But the thing is, you have to follow them. That's civilization. You have to follow the rules. It's amazing. It's very difficult. I would say, you know, for a rock musician, it's weird. It sounds weird. It's like weird. It's now not a three-legged race, it's a 77-legged race, and you just all aren't going to coordinate by spiritual connection. It's not going to work by even sound.
Even if you weren't familiar already with the music of Ben Folds, Nashville residents may still know him as one of our own, even though when he first lived here, it ended, in his words, in failure. You said, if you're failing in Nashville, at least your standard of living is nice. Nashville is a nice way to fail.
Right. I think that's true.
Do you think it's still true?
Well,
from 1996 to now.
One thing is that Nashville is really the only city I can think of that is in our time built on music. That's why I was not down with it being Condo City. It's also right at the bottom of the Midwest and right on the edge of the South, and has a working class mentality to it. And that's there's something safe about that when it comes to music. You know, music is not does not feel as risky of an endeavor here. We got you. And so I do think it's a nicer place to fail. There's other people who have failed around you. They seem to be surviving. I see it. So I stand by that quote. Interestingly, it's always been taken out of context. Just it's a nice place to fail is what people used to say. Why do you say that? It's a nice place to fail. It's like, because it's a nice place if you're going to fail.
What ultimately led you back here, though, for a while, back to Nashville?
The RCA studio that I took over, that's a studio that I'd worked in when I was a budding songwriter here under a publishing contract from 91 to 93. I used to work in that studio a lot, and it was a beautiful studio. And I was walking past it while working on an album here in Nashville, and door was swinging wide open. It was a rent sign on the front. Grass was grown up. And I kind of walked into the place, and there's this woman that said, "Can I help you?" It's like, "Yeah." Noticed that it was for rent. Just interested. And she goes, "I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can afford it. See ya." She called me that night. I think she realized I was a performer of note, and said, "Yeah, take it away." Because my situation was different. I didn't want to run a studio business, so I was there for 12 to 15 years. I don't know how long. 12, 15 years. Yeah. And towards the end, they finally got their bidder that they had always wanted. To mow it down. And by that time I had a little bit more momentum in there, and I threw what weight I had around to try to protect it, because I saw all of the rest of Music Row going behind it, just falling right behind. You have to have like some big dots on the map to hold the rest of it together. And I felt like that's strategically the one to protect anyway. I have to step up and do this.
I'm not a fan, I understand if there is something that moves you that's not my cup of tea. It's part of what makes you beautiful to me.
And with the point that not every landmark gets saved.
That's right, yeah.
Do you feel any parallel between the fight, that fight, for RCA Studio A, and what you're doing with orchestras, that you are working to protect an institution on a larger scale now?
Well, I do have a romantic sort of, you know, connection with things that are old. I feel like it takes so long to get them into place, takes so long to learn it. How long does it take to knock it down and forget so quickly? You know, I've seen in my lifetime that if you're going to kick something out, it's not going to just come back. You can't just get on the phone and say, "Let's get the band back together." It don't work that way. And so I think that's why I take those things seriously. If you disperse the idea of a symphony orchestra and you send them all home, you're done. Grass will grow up between the cracks of the sidewalk of the very notion of a symphony orchestra. The level of civilization that it takes to put music on stands in an orchestra and take the break is like seriously state of the art. And it's taken 250, 300 years. I feel like every generation that comes along has to make damn sure that we don't take five. You can't do that. We don't have five. It's forever if you stop it.
I may or may not be here when you return.
As the artistic advisor to the National Symphony Orchestra, Folds now gets to put his hand in a variety of orchestral projects. He curates a concert series called Declassified. He's working on a piece with author and illustrator Mo Willems. And he also works with guest artists who come in from the pop side of music, putting all of his experiences to a wide use.
I've been playing pops shows for 15 years and have come to the conclusion that it's normally not done very well. And that the reason it's not done very well is because certain technical details needed to have been worked out about the the genre or the endeavor. And what this affords me is an entire production staff, the concert hall of the Kennedy Center and the National Symphony Orchestra, and my favorite artist at my fingertips to try and see what works. And, you know, a lot of the conclusions have been real simple. No monitors. That's the first thing. No monitors on stage. It makes a huge difference. A lot of things about the way you score. I'd mentioned the passing of the melody around the orchestra. Pop artists come in and tend to keep playing. You know, if I play banjo or if I play guitar or piano, I'm used to accompanying myself the entire time. Well, you have to not do that. You have to be part of the orchestra at that point, and that takes a lot of work. Your comfort zone is not there. When you see a symphony orchestra working, you're seeing exactly how a community or civilization or a machine or an organism or anything in any kind of small or big form works as that's it.
Classically Speaking is a production of Nashville Public Radio's 91 Classical. The show is edited by Anita Bug and Carl Peterson is the engineer. Music you heard was from Ben Folds' albums So There, University Acapella, Songs for Silverman, and Ben Folds Live. Keep the conversation going on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We're at 91 Classical on all of those platforms and want to hear from you. I'm Colleen Phelps. Thanks for tuning in for your backstage pass to Nashville's classical music. Classically Speaking.